We're holding Texas above Ahmed Bey's, the third line of the widest lines. Chalk continuing dashing in the Psukim from the Megillah. We're up to the part now where Esther is appearing before Ahasuerus. So the pasuk says, "Vayichir ois ha-melech es Esther ha-malka." When the king saw Esther ha-malka, so she had favor in his eyes, etc. Amar Rabbi Yechonon, "Gimel malachei ha-sharis nizdamnu lo ba'oz ha-shar." At that moment, three malachei ha-sharis came to help her out. Echad she bias tzavara, one lifted up her neck so that she would appear more attractive to Ahasuerus. And Marsha points out the fact that it says nosa chen me'enav, usually the expression in Tanakh for somebody having chen is motza chen. So here nosa literally means lifting up. So therefore that suggests that her neck was actually lifted up. The Another one extended a thread of grace over her. In other words, that Ahasuerus should find her exceptionally graceful and beautiful. Keep in mind, she'd been fasting for 3 days or 2 days by this point. Good morning, Abba Moshe. She'd been fasting for
Good
two or three
morning.
days by this point. So she needed a malach to give her a certain gracefulness in Ahasuerus's eyes. The echad shemosach has a shavit, and the third malach extended out the scepter so that she'd actually be able to touch it because she was standing quite a distance away from Ahasuerus. So Vakama, so how long was the scepter extended? So many different opinions. Amar Rabbi Yirmiyah, shtei amos haya. The scepter naturally was 2 amos long. The malach made it 12 amos long. Va'amilal, others say he made it 16 amos long. Va'amilal, esrim ba'arba. Others say he made it 24 amos long. The Masnisa Tana al Shishim, a Braisa says he made it 60 amos long, and the Braisa says, "V'cheinat ha-moitzah ba'amosa." You find similarly with the arm of Bas Paroi in Parshas Shmos, where she extends out her arm to pick up the basket with baby Moshe in it, that it had to extend long for her to reach it. And you find similarly with the teeth of the Rishoyim, the pasuk says, you broke the teeth of the Rishoyim. Here in the Gemara it says Shri Bavta. Both Rashi and Tosfos point out the word is really supposed to be Shir Bavta, which means that you extended the teeth of the Rosha, you extended. This is talking about the story in Gemara Brachos where Og Melech HaBashan was planning to take a gigantic rock, a gigantic mountain, and throw it on the Jewish people, and Hashem sent ants that ate through the rock and caused it to fall down onto his head. And then when he tried to extricate himself, then his teeth grew long, and his and that they got wedged into the mountain, and therefore he couldn't take it off his head. So we see over there that the teeth of the Rishoyim Hashem extends. And so there also, so we see just like Hashem extended the scepter over here so that Esther would be able to touch it, the same way Hashem extended the Basya's arm and the same way Hashem extended Og's teeth. Rabbi Ba'ufran says in the name of Rabbi Lazar, who heard from his Rebbe, who in turn heard from his Rebbe, that the scepter was extended Mosayim 200 amos. Now, in the case of the 200, we're saying Rabbi Bar Ofron had the Kabbalah from his Rebbeim going back several generations. Where are we getting the other opinion, the 12 or the 16 or the 24 or the 60? So Marsha points out, if you look at the pasuk over there, Vayhi Chirois HaMelech as Esther HaMalka Emetis B'chatzer, etc., from the beginning of the pasuk until and including the word Vayoshit, that the king extended the scepter, there are 12 words, and 12 words from there to the end of the pasuk. That's why the first opinion says, in keeping with that, that the scepter was extended 12 amos. The second opinion says, look at the whole pasuk, it has 24 words, therefore 24 amos. The third one says, look at the number of letters in the words from the beginning of the pasuk until Vayoshit, equals 60, so therefore 60 amos. So therefore 60 amos, and in the case of Shin Rishoyim also, we find, Marsha points out, after all, the pasuk could have said Shein Rishoyim, and instead it says Shinei Rishoyim, so like you have an extra nun and an extra yud, sort of. So that adds up to 60. So that hints at the idea that Og's teeth were extended out 60 amos in order to get wedged into the mountain, and therefore, again, when it comes to Esther, you have there are 60 letters in the pasuk from the beginning of the pasuk until the Vayoshet HaMelech Esther. Okay, so So the pasuk says, "Vayomer ha'amelach la'Esther ha'malka." So the king asked Esther ha'malka, "Ma bakashosei chachatzi ha'malchus v'seyos? What do you want? Up to half the kingdom, and it'll be granted." So why does he say half the kingdom? Tona chatzi ha'malchus v'loy kol ha'malchus. He's saying exactly that. He's saying, "I'll give you half the kingdom, but not the entire kingdom." V'loy dava shechotzit v'malchus. And also not something that is in the middle of the kingdom, he's hinting. Or my new binyan beis mikdash. He's hinting at, I'm not going to give you my permission for the building of the beis mikdash to be continued. Keep in mind, this was during the 18 years when the work on the second beis mikdash had been suspended because of the mesira that the kosim and the other enemies of the Jewish people had brought to Kodesh and Achashverosh. So this was during that period when that was suspended. Now Achashverosh at this point doesn't know that Esther is Jewish. He only finds that out later. But he did know that she has a certain connection with Mordechai. She was raised by him after all. And so he had reason to think that they might be sending her to petition for that. So therefore, he's telling her in advance, you should know I'm not going to grant such a petition. In what way is the Beis Mikdash choitzet b'malchus? So Rashi explains, because the Beis Mikdash Yerushalayim in general and the Eretz Yisrael in general and the Beis Mikdash specifically are in the middle of the world. So choitzet b'malchus literally means it's like in the middle of my kingdom. Marsha says also there's the fact that Achashverosh is saying if we have the whole point was when they gave. When they mastered on the Jews and caused the building to be stopped, the claim was that if they continue building the Beis Mikdash, they're going to end up being powerful enough to rebel against the kings of Persia. So Achashverosh still held by that. So therefore, he's saying that if the Beis Mikdash were to be built, it would break up. It would be choitzet, like Meloshon Chatzitza. It would be an interposition in the middle of my kingdom, which would cause that my kingdom would break up and rebel. So therefore, I'm not going to do it. So that's why he says Chatzi Amalchus. Next, so the pasuk says, so Esther says, Yovei Amalach b'Haman al Mishta, let the king and Haman come to the party. So, Tana Rabbanan, Ma Ros Esther Shezimna as Haman. Why did
at the
Esther
end of the day, at the end of the day, he never gave even Chetzi Amalchus.
Well, he was willing to give it if she wanted it. She didn't. In the event, she asked only for the lives of the Jewish people. But he was saying, I'm willing to give you even Chetzi Amalchus.
Why she didn't ask?
Because she didn't. She was going to ask for the sake of the Jewish people. She wasn't looking for greatness and power and whatever for herself.
No. Yeah. She could have asked for the Jewish people and for herself.
Yeah, she didn't need to. You ask for too much, you don't necessarily get anything. Okay, so Yovei Amelech b'Haman al Mishta. So Tana Rabbanan, Ma Rosa Esther Shezimna as Haman. What was Esther thinking that she invited Haman to this party? So the Gemara is going to bring a whole bunch of reasons, almost a dozen reasons. Rabbi Eliezer says she was setting a trap for Haman. Shenema, as the pasuk says, Yehi Shochanim lefneim lefach, let their table be like a trap for them. So she's figuring that once Haman is at the party, then she may be able to ensnare him and entrap him. Rabbi Yeshua Omer, Mibei Savi Alamda. Rabbi Yeshua says she learned from her ancestors that this is the right way to do when you're faced with a rasha, meaning Rashi says she heard the children learning this pasuk. Shenema, as the pasuk says, Im roiv seinacha hachileu lechem lechem. If your enemy is hungry, then feed him with bread. And the pasuk goes on to say, because you're going to be heaping coals on his head. So in other words, she knew from that pasuk that she has to treat her enemy like sort of like the expression in English, kill him with kindness, and then that way she'll be able to be in a position to be able to pour coals on his head and destroy him. Reb Meir says the reason why she wanted to invite him is this way he doesn't have time to go consult with his advisors and whatever and go rebel against Ahasuerus. After all, Haman may feel himself right now he's on the top of the world. He's the prime minister. Everybody's honoring him and so forth. So that may give him the idea. You know what? I'm so powerful. I ought to depose Ahasuerus and take over the kingdom. So like this, she has him by her party. So this way that this way he doesn't have time for that. Rabbi Yehuda says the reason was that she didn't want that people should realize that she's Jewish. Now again, I mean, they didn't know for all these years that she's Jewish, but now that all of a sudden she's risking her life and coming to Ahasuerus, people are likely to start thinking, you know what, let's put two and two together. This has obviously something to do with Haman's recent decree. So she must be Jewish herself. So therefore, to forestall any such suspicions, she invites Haman to the party. Then people are going to say, why would she be inviting Haman, the arch enemy of her people? Obviously, she must not be Jewish. Reb Nechemia, in Mekadesh Lo Yomer Yisrael, Ochis L'Yeshlonim, Rebbeis HaMelech, Reb Nechemia says the reason was for the Jewish people themselves. They shouldn't say, oh, look at that. We have a sister in the palace. We got nothing to worry about. We have Sichu Daitin Min Arachimim, and they're going to be distracted from davening to Hashem for Rachimim. They're going to think we don't have to plead so strongly with Hashem to save us from the Gzeira because Esther is there and she'll work on our behalf. Like this, when they see that she's inviting Haman, they're going to say to themselves, well, if it really is true that we have a sister in the palace, she's obviously not working on our behalf. She's working on behalf of Haman. We better daven more strongly to Hashem because obviously she's not going to help us. Reb Yossi says the reason she invited Haman is so that he'll be available to her at all times. This way, maybe she'll be able to cause some way in which he'll stumble and then in front of the king and insult the king. The more he's there, the more likely it is that he'll do something wrong. Reb Shimon ben Manasseh, Ula Yagish Hamakim Yasalon and Esther. Reb Shimon ben Manasseh says she invited Haman with the thought that maybe Hashem will realize it and do a nest for us. Rashi says one is that she's saying that look that I'm bringing close an enemy of the Jewish people, so maybe Hashem will see that. Like Maharshal says, in other words, Rashi is saying that Hashem may realize, look, we're really in a desperate situation. We really must be very desperate if I'm in a position of having to invite Haman to a party. So that will make Hashem realize we really have nowhere else to turn. Also, Rashi says that Hashem may take into consideration the fact that I have to set my own covet aside and flatter this Rasha and make him pretend like he's so important to me. So that way, also maybe that'll cause Hashem to have rachmim, the fact that I'm being forced to set aside my own dignity for this purpose. Rabbi Yeshua ben Kochaim. Asper Loiponim, Rabbi Shuvan Kocha says she invited him to the party, figuring I'm going to show him a friendly face. Kadesh Yehorig, who were he? What'll end up happening? Both Haman and Esther can end up getting killed because, in other words, Achashverosh is going to start getting suspicious. He's going to think that Haman and Esther have something going on between them. So he's going to execute Haman for trifling with the queen. He's going to execute her as well. Fine, she figures, I'm willing to go to my death as long as Haman himself gets killed. And when he gets killed, then his gzeira will be bottle. Rabban Gamliel says, what it is she knew that Achashverosh is a very fickle person. He easily changes his mind. So therefore, what's going to happen? If I manage to convince Achashverosh to kill Haman, by the time, if Haman is not there, by the time they go and fetch Haman, then Achashverosh may well change his mind. Therefore, I better have him here on the scene so that when and if I can convince Achashverosh to go against Haman, then right away he'll carry out the sentence. Amar Rav Gamliel, so Rav Gamliel says, okay, so far we have many reasons why Esther invited Haman. Adayin tzrichin onu l'mudoi. We still need the reason that the Mudoi, Rav Elazar HaMudoi, gave. The Tanya Rav Elazar HaMudoi, rather. The Tanya Rav Elazar HaMudoi, Kin Atu B'melech Kin Atu B'sorim. She made this way that the king is going to be jealous of him and the other ministers are going to be jealous of him. In other words, the king is going to be jealous. What do you mean? You're making a party and you're inviting only him out of all the ministers, it's going to make him start thinking that she considers Haman higher than all the other ministers, including maybe even more important than him. And that way she starts getting the king suspicious and jealous of him. And the same way the other ministers are now suspicious and jealous of Haman. So that way, like, she destroys his power base. Now, why is this such a good reason that Rav Gamliel is saying we need this reason and all the other reasons are not enough? Maharsha explains, because when you get down to it, the original question why she invited Haman really needs two answers. There's two different aspects of the question. Number one, why did she b'chlal make parties? Why didn't she straight out tell Achashverosh what she's coming for, that she has to make two parties before she tells him? And number two, of all the people that she was going to invite, why did she specifically invite Haman? So all the other answers gave an explanation why she invited Haman. They didn't really focus so much on the question of why she made the parties in the first place. So now Rav Elazar HaMudoi's answer is the first one that really addresses both of those issues. So now you have a couple of Amoroim who give answers as well. Rabba Omer Lifnei Sheva Goin. Rabba says it's based on the pasuk before, but pride comes before fall, before breakage, before fall comes pride. So therefore, so she wanted that Haman should be at the peak of his pride. Look at this. I was invited to a personal banquet together with the queen and king, and then that'll make that his fall will be that much faster and that much more and that much more intense. Abaya and Rava, Damit Abaya, B'chumam Asher, says Mishtei and B'gamer. Abaya and Rava both quote in this connection a pasuk that says, "In their heat, I'll set up their party." So the original context, Rashi says, is that Belshazzar and his army had fought a war against Daryavash and Kodesh, the king and the viceroy of Parash Umadai. Belshazzar had beaten them, so now they're chumam, now they're hot and tired from the battle, but they were happy that they had won, and that was when Belshazzar made his party, the famous party where he took the kalim of the Beis Hamikdash, as we talked about the other day, and then came the writing on the wall, and then that night Belshazzar was killed. So the same way, Esther is thinking to herself, that the punishment of Rishoyim sometimes comes at when they're in the middle of a party, so therefore that's maybe what's going to happen now also. Now, what's the difference between that and the first explanation of Pachim Tom Naloi, that she set up a snare for him? Marsha explained that that meant that she wanted to ensnare and entrap Haman. This one, she's thinking to herself, Belshazzar was a king, Achashverosh is a king too. After all, as we learned the other day, Achashverosh hates the Yidden at least as much as Haman does. So therefore, maybe now both of them will get trapped. Maybe now both of them will be like Belshazzar, and they're going to get punished and destroyed in the course of a party that they're having. Okay. So the Gemara says, Ashkechei Rava Bar Avua Leliyahu. One time Rava Bar Avua met up with Eliyahu Navi. Omale Kiman Chazia Esther Va'Avdahachi. So he asks him, Taka, which of these reasons was Esther thinking of when she did this, when she made this party and invited Haman? Omale, and Eliyahu tells him, Kulu Tanoyu Kulu Amaroi. Actually, she had in mind everything that all these Tanoim said and everything that all these Amoroim said. All of these reasons were reasons that she thought to herself why this would be the best course of action right now. Okay, so the pasuk goes on to say that Haman goes home after the first party. By Sapalam Haman has kvod osher v'roi bonav. Haman tells his family about the tremendous glory of his wealth and about his many children. Now, Marsha explains the Gemara is going to assume that he had more than just the 10 children that it says in the Megillah, because to have 10 children is not that big a deal. You have figures in Tanakh, in Sefer Shoftim, for example, who had 30 or 40 or even 70 children. So therefore, the Gemara has to assume that he had more than just the 10 that we're saying. Otherwise, it wouldn't be such a big thing for him to be boasting about. So v'kama roiv bonav, how many are the roiv, how many are the many children that he had? Omar Rav Lamed. So Rav says he had 30 children. Asara Mesu, 10 of them died naturally or were killed maybe during the wars or whatever. Ba'asara Niklu, 10, the 10 that are mentioned in the Megillah were hanged. Ba'asara Mechazrin al-Psachim, and the other 10 became beggars and they were wandering around from door to door begging for tzedakah. V'rabbanan Amri, Oysen Shemechazrin al-Psachim, Shivim Havya. The Rabbanan say, I agree, there was this threefold division, but the ones who were reduced to begging is not just 10, there were actually 70 of them. Dichtiv, as the Pasuk says, in Chana's Shira, whereas we learned the other day, Chana was a Nevi'ah, and in her Shira, she talks about the eventual downfall of various enemies of the Jewish people, including Haman. She says a pasuk over there, Sveim Balechem Niskaru, the ones who were satisfied were hired out for bread. So the simple meaning of the pasuk is that you have people who used to be satisfied, they had plenty to eat, and now they're reduced to hiring themselves out for degrading jobs in order to get a little bread. But we're saying over here, I'll take Sveim Ela Shivim. Don't read Sveim, that they were satisfied, but Shivim, 70. So therefore, she's hinting at Shivim Balechem Niskaru, these 70 sons of Haman are having to hire themselves out to beg for bread. The Rami Ba'aba Omar, another opinion, Rami Ba'aba says, Kulan Masin Ushmoinahav, Masayim Ushmoinahavu. Altogether, Haman had not, as we said, according to the first opinion, 30 children, and according to the second opinion, 90, but rather we had 208. Because it says that he talked about the many children that he had. So and the word veroiv is gematria 208. says, what do you mean? What do you mean? Vav Resh Vav Vez adds up to 214. And the answer is, yes, but in the Megillah, it's not written Veroiv with the second Vav, it's written Vav Resh Vez, and yes, that adds up to 208. So that hints that he had 208 children. And of them, again, the 10 were hanged in the Megillah, and the rest of them died or were reduced to begging. Okay. The pasuk continues, Balailahu nodded Ashnas HaMelech. On that night, the king's sleep was disturbed. So Omer Abtanchum nodded Ashnas Malkei Shel Olam. The word HaMelech over here doesn't necessarily just mean Ahasuerush. It means the king of the world, Hashem, his sleep, Kavyocho, was disturbed. Meaning, we have psukim like that describes, so to speak, like Hashem is sleeping, like, and then you have psukim that describe Hashem arousing his arousing himself to go and act on behalf of the Jewish people, which are described as Hashem waking up. As for example, you have a pasuk in Tehillim by Yikatz Ki Yoshen Avaya that Hashem awoke as if he was sleeping. Now, of course, he knows the Yonim Vol Yishad, but in other words, sometimes, like it talks about in the Bar Mitzvah Maimah, sometimes Hashem runs the world almost in a kind of sleep mode. Like Hashem doesn't act like Hashem acts in a way like the world is still going to exist, but he doesn't really directly involve himself with it. So now, all of a sudden, now Hashem is, so to speak, waking up from that and deciding that he's going to now actively intervene on behalf of the Jewish people. So that's the Nadar Ashnas HaMelech. But Rabbanan Amri, Nadadu El Yonim, Nadadu Tachtonim. The Rabbanan say what it means is the upper creatures were disturbed and the lower creatures were disturbed, which means, Rashi says, two possibilities. One is that the Malachim, the whole night, are coming and frightening Ahasuerush, and constantly coming to him in his dream and telling him, "You ingrate! You have to pay for you have to pay the person. You have to reward the person who saved your life." And the second explanation, Rashi says, is the Elyonim, the Malachim, are disturbed and they're not at rest in order to induce the ones lower down, the Jews here on earth, to daven very fervently that they should be saved. So like this, they know that they have the Malachim davening along with them. So that's the Nodadu Elyonim, Nodadu Tachtonim. Mashar explains the Gemara is bothered by the fact that usually when it says Nodadu Shnas, usually it would give a reason for it. Here the Pasuk doesn't say what exactly caused this Nodadu Shnas, which is what leads us to these different drushes. Rava says literally it means the sleep of King Ahasuerush himself was disturbed. Now, why all of a sudden on that night was it disturbed? Nafle milsa b'dayte. Because all of a sudden Ahasuerush starts thinking, Omar, my dekamon is a mince Esther lahaman. What's going on all of a sudden that Esther decided to invite Haman to the party? Dilma eitza kashakli ilavei dahu gavra l'miktalei. Are they maybe plotting together against that person, meaning Ahasuerush himself, to assassinate him? So that therefore he was worried. Hodor Amar, then he thinks to himself, Ihochi, well, if that were the case, if Haman and Esther were plotting together like that, Loi haba gavra d'rochim li davam moidali, wouldn't there be at least one person in the palace who likes me and would reveal the secret to me? Hodor Amar, then he thinks to himself, you know what? I know why, maybe not. Duma ikka inish da'ovibi tivusa, maybe there's once somebody who did me a favor, v'loi prate, and I never rewarded him for it. Mishamachi, mimni inshi v'loi maguli. Therefore now, it could be that there is a plot going on against my life, but now people are saying, why should I bother? Last time his life was saved, he didn't bother rewarding the guy. So that train of thought led him to Miyad by Yom Lahavi, a Sefer HaZechronis, Divrei HaYomim. So therefore, right away, he ordered the chronicles to be brought so they could read through and see if there was anybody who had ever saved the king's life or done him a tremendous favor that hadn't yet been rewarded. So that was the Sarava saying, that was the train of thought that led him from having his sleep being disturbed to asking for the Sefer HaZechronis. We have to remember, by the way, that from when Mordechai saved Ahasuerush's life, until now was many years. Again, Esther was brought to the palace and crowned as queen in the 7th year of Ahasuerush. Now this is already the 12th year of Ahasuerush. So sometime between then, so sometime shortly after Esther had become queen, is when the story with Bigzan and Teresh happened. So it was 5 years earlier. Okay, so the pasuk is by Yiyu Nikroim. They were being read. Now they expected it. Expression would be by Yikru Oysam or something. So therefore it means Malamach Nikroim Me'elehim. meaning they were being read by themselves, meaning the scribe, who, as the Gemara is going to say in a second, was Shimshai, the son of Haman, did not actually want to read this part about Mordechai saving the king's life. So it was read on its own, like as if a voice came from the book and started reading it, because Shimshai didn't want him. Now, the pasuk says, Vayimotze Kosuv, it was found written. Now, Kosuv suggests that it was just written now. But what do you mean? Ksavni Boyle, it should say they found the inscription. It was at least 5 years old by that point. The answer is Malama Shimshai Mochik the Gabriel Kosuv. That teaches us that Shimshai, who was the king's scribe, and he was a Sony Israel, Rashi mentions that in Sefer Ezra, it tells when the Kusim and so forth plotted to force the stoppage of the work on building the Beis Mikdash. It mentions over there this Shimshai, the scribe who wrote the letter for them and assisted in the plot. In fact, Rashi mentions in the Pesukim over there, he says he did that during the time of Kodesh as well as in the time of Ahasuerus. The Targum on Megillas Esther says that he was actually a son of Haman. So he was trying to erase, so Shimshai Moichik, he's trying to erase this thing that it says in the Sefer HaZichronos about Mordechai saving the king's life, but Gabriel Kosev, but then Gabriel is rewriting it right then. So it really was Kosev, it was like freshly written, that Mordechai had done this. And the Gemara mentions in this connection, Amar Rav Asi, Dorash Rav Shila Ish Kfar Tamarta, Rav Shila from Kfar Tamarta Darshan in this connection. You can see from this, Umak Sab Shalamata Shalos and Israel and in Nimchak, Madach, the writing down here on earth, which is for the good of the Jewish people, is not erased, because even when a Shimshai tries erasing it, the Malach comes and rewrites it. Ksav Shalomaila, like Koshkin, how much more so an inscription, Lamaila in Shemayim, when Hashem writes the Schosim of the Jewish people, surely that never gets erased, and Hashem is always going to pay back for good for what they did. Next, the pasuk says Loi Nasa Imay Davar. So Achashverosh says, so was anything done to reward Mordechai? And it says the Nare Amelech, the attendants of the king, said Loi Nasa Imay Davar. Nothing was done with him. Amar Rava. So Rava points out Loi Mipnesha Oyav and its Mordechai. They didn't say that really because they loved Mordechai and they wanted to see him honored. Elo Mipnesha Sonimus Haman. The reason was because they hated Haman and they wanted to see him taken down a peg. So Marsha explains that's why they use the expression Loi Nasa Imay Davar to suggest that you loy nasi imoy would mean you didn't do for him something that's appropriate to reward him. Loy nasi imoy davar suggests you don't need to do anything big for him, just something small and insignificant to reward him. But that way, at least it'll be a poke in Haman's eyes. There's another explanation. There's a sefer of chidushim on several masechtas, including Megillah, called Sifsei Chachamim. It's not the same as Sifsei Chachamim Rashi. He says what they're saying is Haman is, after all, he's the prime minister. Therefore, he's the one responsible for such things. So they're saying that nothing was done in order to make Achashverosh figure to himself, look at that careless Haman. He didn't do something that's his responsibility to take care of. So again, they're not doing it so much because they love Mordechai, but because they wanted to make Ahasuerus feel that Haman is irresponsible and he didn't do what he was supposed to. Okay. So the pasuk says that Haman had meanwhile come to ask Ahasuerus to hang Mordechai on the gallows that Heichin Loi, that he prepared for him. So what's this prepared for him? Tana Loi Heichin V'Asa. Loi Heichin. It means that Haman prepared the gallows for himself. In other words, he didn't realize when he first built it that all along it was meant to hang him rather than Mordechai. Mephoshim explained, in other words, as opposed to the decree against the Jewish people, which might indeed, Chas v'Shalom, have been carried out were it not for the Jewish people did tremendous tshuva. So therefore, it's like originally it was on them and then it was turned against their enemies. Here, the gallows, Min HaShemayim, was never meant to hang Mordechai in the first place. It was always meant, Min HaShemayim, to hang Haman. So therefore, that's why it says Hechin Lo. What?
But was there any time where Esther was a little worried about doing something against Mordechai, knowing that Esther was brought up at Mordechai's house?
Well, I mean, the fact that she invited Haman before, again, we were saying there were a bunch of reasons why she invited Haman, and among those reasons were because she figured we don't want the people to think, you know what, I was raised in Mordechai's house, we have a sister in the palace, we don't have to worry. So you're asking, was she worried that she's going against Mordechai? I mean, what
was he worried? Was was Haman worried that here I want to ask the king.
Oh, well, that's the thing. That's a number of the reasons that we said why she invited Haman was in order to allay his fears. That now he's thinking to himself, she's inviting me to her party. She must be on my side. So therefore, I got nothing to worry about.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. So Ahasuerus tells, so after Haman tells Ahasuerus about what should be done, so Ahasuerus tells him, he tells him, go do that for Mordechai. Now, the Pasuk mentions all the details. Go do this for Mordechai, the Jew who sits at the king's gate. So what does that mean? Why do we need all those details? It means, Amalei Manu Mordechai. So Haman like plays dumb. Which Mordechai are you talking about? Amalei HaYehudi. So therefore, Ahasuerus has to tell him, the Jewish one. Okay, there's a lot of Jews named Mordechai. Which one are you talking about? So he tells him the one who sits at the king's gate. So Haman says, okay, in that case, you don't need to honor him with that whole procession that I was just suggesting. Remember, Haman, we said, had intended that would be for himself. So you know, he doesn't need that. It should be enough to give him one village that he'll be able to collect taxes from and whatever. Inami b'chad nara, or one bridge where you can collect tolls over there. What do you need to do in this whole cover? Omale, so Ahasuerus says, you know what? That's a good idea. Honami havle, give that to him as well, but you still have to go make this procession for him. As the pasuk finishes off, al tapel dover, dover mikola shedibauta. Don't leave anything out of what you said. In other words, if it just meant that he's going to make the procession, then Ahasuerus doesn't need to add those words. So that implies that Haman had proposed some other way that Mordechai should be honored by giving him a village or a river or whatever to be the master of that. And Ahasuerus tells him, you know what? Do both. Give him make the procession for him, but also make sure that he gets a village or a river and that he can exercise authority over that.
What's the turnaround over here? Snap! The old son, the king hates his best friend.
When he didn't necessarily hate him yet. He was just, the fact is that he needs to, the fact that he didn't yet hate him, that was only in the next era. This is, at this point, he knows he needs to reward Mordechai. Again, there is the point that Rava made before that Ahasuerus is doing this for his own purposes, because in the future he wants that in case there are plots against him, then somebody should come and tell him. He already has, he doesn't hate Haman yet, but on the other hand, he does have reason to be suspicious of him. For one thing, again, we said the fact that Esther invited him to her parties, seeming to indicate that she puts him on an equal level with the king. So now he wasn't as necessarily as well-disposed to Haman as he was before. I mean, there's a lot of points in it also. There is also the fact, Mephoshim point out, you know, you have in the Megillah, it describes over there how Haman comes early in the morning. You know, we're talking about Ahasuerus can't sleep in the middle of the night, and already Haman is coming there to ask for permission. So already Ahasuerus was in a bit of a grouchy mood that he hadn't slept well that night. And all of a sudden Haman is coming so early in the morning. What does he need with me now? So therefore, for all those with, now that was all min hashamayim, in order that Ahasuerus should be a little grouchy against Haman and be insisting that he does whatever he tells him.
Or perhaps because he told him to give him the king's horse. And all that, the personal
stuff. Well, that too, right? Yeah, also that he mentions Kesem Malchus, that also made Ahasuerus suspicious of Haman's motives. Yeah, all of that factored in. All of that was engineered min Hashemayim, so that Ahasuerus starts thinking less of Haman, and that paves the way for the next perek where he actually orders him executed. So the pasuk says, Haman took the royal robes and the horse, so he went to find Mordechai. He found Mordechai sitting with the Chachamim learning in front of him. Actually, the Medrash says it wasn't the Chachamim. Rashi just says Rabbanan means Talmidav. The Medrash says that it was actually Jewish children, 22,000 Jewish children that Mordechai had gathered together to teach them Torah in the face of this dangerous situation. So, Mordechai was demonstrating to the Talmidim the halachas of kmitza, how you take a koimetz from a mincha. That was very appropriate for the day because it was the 16th of Nisan. It's the day you bring the korban omer. So that was in Yonah de Yomer, and therefore he's teaching them that. So Machavilu hilchas kmitza, the Rabbanon, he's showing the Talmidim hilchas kmitza. Kivin de chadye Mordechai de apikul kivlei. When Mordechai sees that Haman is coming towards him, and he's holding a horse together with him, Nirtas, Mordechai was afraid. He says to the Talmidim, "Hi, Rashi, this Rasha evidently is coming to kill me. Zilu osi zilu mikamei, go leave him, go run away from you. Delete kovu begachalosai, that you don't get burnt with his coals. In other words, that you don't end up being collateral damage where he's coming to try and kill me. In the Medrash, actually, the Talmidim, the children, say, absolutely not, Mordechai, we're staying with you until the end. So Mordechai at that moment wrapped himself up and got up in order to daven. Also, Haman v'yosef le'kamayu. Haman comes and he doesn't barge in to kill Mordechai like Mordechai thought he was going to do. He comes, he sits down in front of them, but Urich, and he's waiting ad desolik Mordechai le'tzloise until Mordechai finished davening. Everybody must have been wondering what's going on. Omalahu b'mayaskitu. When Mordechai finished davening, he asks them, "What were you just discussing?" So they explained to him. Bizman shebeis mikdash kayim. Back when the beis mikdash was standing, which at this point it had been destroyed for 60 odd years. Man de menadav mincha. Anybody who voluntarily wanted to bring a korban mincha, maisi meloy kumtze de solta. He would bring a fistful of flour. Not literally a fistful. It was an isarin, but still a very small amount of flour. Or miskaperlei. Well, actually, I mean the koymetz was a fistful, and the koymetz was what went on the mizbeach, and that's what accomplished the kapara. Or miskaperlei, and with that, the person would have kapara. So Haman says, "Wow, osi maloi kumtze kimcha didchu. One handful of your flour seems to have come the dochi asara alfi kikra didi and overpowered my 10,000 kicker. I offered Achashverosh 10,000 kicker in order to get rid of Mordechai and the Jews, and now your koimetz of flour seems to have overpowered that. And look at the position I'm in now." Omalei, so Mordechai interjects into the conversation. He says, "Rasha." Eved shekana nechasim, eved lemi, or nechasim lemi. You Russia, you're talking about your 10,000 kicker of silver. What, your 10,000? You're my eved. As we talked about yesterday, where at one point many years earlier, Haman had sold himself to Mordechai as a slave for food. So you're my eved. When an eved owns property, who does the eved belong to and who does the nechasim belong to? So what are you even talking about? Your 10,000 kicker of silver. So Haman tells Mordechai, "Kum levoish ani money, come get up and put on these royal robes, or the chayv haisusia, and ride on this horse. The boy lachmalka, the king wants you to be honored like that." So Mordechai tells him, "Lo yachilna, I can't just get on there right away. It's not derech eretzik. Adayuna the bay bunny. Before I first go to the bathhouse," he had been wearing sackcloth and ashes. It was a couple of days. This was already on the third day of the fasting, so I have to first take a bath. The eshkol amazia, and I have to cut my hair. When I'm in a disheveled state like this, with long hair, and then haven't taken a bath and whatever in a couple of days, it wouldn't be respectful to just go put on the king's robes and so forth as is. Well, shodra Esther vasatinu lekula beboni ulekula umni. Esther sent word throughout the capital and had an order that all the bathhouses and all the barbers should be closed. Now, she may have done that in order that, as we're going to say, that Haman is forced to do it to Mordechai himself, realizing she may have realized this, or it might be that she ordered them closed in order that this way they're available, this way they're all going to be there watching when the procession is going by and nobody's going to be busy working. Whatever the case, so they're all closed. So I lay ihu the bay bunny. So Haman had to bring Mordechai personally into the bathhouse, but Aschai, and he had to bathe him. But also I see Zuzumi Base, and he went and brought scissors from his house because Shaka be Mazia, and he was cutting Mordechai's hair. Interesting, by the way, the Gemara in Avodah Zarah tells us you're not allowed to be alone with a goy and have him cut your hair or whatever, because he may use the razor meanwhile to cut your neck. However, the Gemara says over there that an Odom Choshuv, an important person, is different because the goy is going to be afraid to harm the important yid, knowing that he's going to get in trouble. Well, that was the situation over here. Mordechai knew that if Haman tries anything against him, then he's going to have to answer to Achashverosh. So therefore, he knew that Haman is going to be afraid to do anything to harm him in any way. The Gemara continues, Bahadi de Koshokile, as Haman was cutting Mordechai's hair, in Gid v'Itnach. He sighed, he moaned and he sighed. Omalei amai komet nachas. So Mordechai asked him, "What are you sighing about?" Omalei, so Haman says, look at how low I've fallen. Me, the person who was more important to the king than all of his other ministers, now I'm degraded to becoming a bathhouse attendant and a barber. And you actually have, halacha, for example, a person who had such jobs is so degraded that you're not allowed to appoint, you can't appoint them a king, because once they've worked in such a degrading job, people are going to look down on them. So that's what Haman is saying now, that I was the most important minister in the kingdom, and now I'm reduced to these degrading jobs. Amalei, so Mordechai answers him, Rosha, the lav sapper shall kfar kautzum ha'isa. Weren't you once the barber in kfar kautzum? So what do you feel so bad? You're just going back to your original job. And in fact, Tana, we learn in a braisa. Haman Saper Shokvar Kautzim Hoya, Esther Mishtaim Shona. As a matter of fact, Haman was the barber in Kvar Kautzim for 22 years. So, Bosser de Shakunu Lamazie, so after he cut Mordechai's hair, Lavshinu Lamone, he has him put on the royal robes, Omele Sakur Rechab, he tells Mordechai, get up onto the horse and start riding. Omele Lo Yachilna, so Mordechai tells him, I can't. Dekhisha Cheloi Mimeta Anisa, I'm weak from the fasting, from the last 3 days of fasting. Gochin besodik. So Haman had no choice. He has to fulfill what the king says. So he had to bend down onto the ground for Mordechai to climb up on top of him. Kisodik boyfe. As Mordechai was climbing up, he gave Haman a kick. Amalei, so Haman says, doesn't it say in your Tanakh, doesn't it say in your scriptures, in your Tanakh, the Pasuk in Mishlei, when your enemy is falling, don't be happy. So why are you acting in such a way that you're even giving me a kick when I'm low down over here? Amalei, so Mordechai tells him, Hani Mila B'Yisrael, that only applies to a Jewish enemy. But when it comes to enemies like you, the Goy Haman, the Pasuk says, you will step on their heights. So therefore, I have every right to be stepping on you and even to be giving you a kick now when you're down. Okay, so the Pasuk says, Vayikra lefanav kocha ye'asal isha sha'am al-chafet v'ikar, right? So Haman is calling out in the streets during the procession, this should be done to the man that the king wants to honor. So, ki avanokit v'ozol b'shvila de Haman, as he was coming down the street where Haman himself lived, chazise brate de kaima igra, his daughter was standing on the roof and saw the procession going down below. Savra, she couldn't see from the distance who's who. Savra, she thought, hi de Rochev Avua, the one who's riding on the horse is her father, but hi de Maske Kamei Mordechai, and the one walking before him and leading the procession is Mordechai. Shakla Atsitsa de Besakise, so she took a chamber pot full of excrement, Meshadisa Resha Davua, and threw it down on her father's head. You know, when we're kids, we always learn that she threw down a garbage pail on him. We see in the Gemara, it wasn't a garbage pail. It was something a lot more degrading than that. So she threw it on her own father's head. Doli Eine, he lifted up his eyes to see who did that. V'chazos Davuahu, all of a sudden she saw, this is my father I just threw this on. She was so embarrassed, Nafla Me'igra La'ara Umesa. She threw herself off the roof to the ground, and she died. V'hainu Dichtiv, V'yoshav Mordechai Ashar HaMelech. So that's what it says after the procession. Mordechai returned to the king's gate. Omer Rav Sheshes Sheshav L'Sakro L'Tanmi. So Rav Sheshes says it means that he returned to his sackcloth and his fasting. In other words, he didn't think to himself, look at this, Achashverosh honored me, that means the danger is over. No, he still continued davening and pleading with Hashem to save the Yidden, because they're not out of danger yet. And the pasuk continues, Vahaman nidchaf al beisa ovo v'hafui rosh. Haman was pushed to his house. He was in mourning and with his head covered. So why the double expression? It means oval al bita. He's in mourning for his daughter who was killed. V'hafui rosh, and he's covered. He has his head covered from embarrassment. Al she'ir aloi, because of what happened to him. So therefore, so we see that that's what happened. So the pasuk continues, Vayisaper Haman l'zerosh ishto l'chol oyavav v'gomer. So the pasuk says that Haman and then told everything that happened to his wife, Zeresh, and to all his friends. So first it says he said his friends, but then the pasuk continues that his wise men said to him. So what kari lahu oyavav, kari lahu chachamav. First it calls them his friends, then it calls them his wise men. So what is it? Amar Rabbi Yechanan, kola oimid dvar chachma, because it means that anybody who says something of chachma, afilu b'umas olam, even if it's a goy, and he's saying something wise, nikra chacham, he deserves to be called a chacham. So therefore, so they're giving him very wise advice, as we're going to go on to say in the Gemara. Therefore, the pasuk calls them chachamim in token of that. So what do they tell him? Im mizera Yehudim Mordechai v'Gomer. If Mordechai is from the seed of the Jews, now they can't mean by that if Mordechai is a Jew. It's already well known at that point that Mordechai is a Jew. They don't have to be saying if. So what it means is, the implication is, they're telling him within the Jews themselves, there are different lineages, there are different shvatim, and some of them have more power over you than others. So they tell him, Omrulai, imishar shvatim ka'asi, if Mordechai descends from one of many of the shvatim, yechaltalei, then you will eventually be able to overpower him. The imishavet Yehuda uvinyamin v'Ephraim u'Menasha, lo yechaltalei. But if Mordechai is descended from any of these four shvatim, Yehuda, Binyamin, Ephraim, u'Menasha, then you will not be able to overpower him. So that was the advice they gave him. Now, how do we see that those four shvatim have a special power? Yehuda dechtiv yodcha ba'odav oivecha. By Yehuda, Yaakov gave him a bracha, your hand will be on the neck of your enemies. In other words, like your enemies are going to be turning their necks to you and running away in fear, and you're going to still be able to dominate them. So therefore, that means that Shevet Yehuda has a special power to defeat their enemies. And Enoch, as far as the other three, the Pasuk says, Lifnei Ephraim of Binyamin and Menasha, Oros Gvorasecha, we ask Hashem, before Ephraim and Binyamin and Menasha, arouse your strength against the goyim. So we see that they have min hashamayim, a special strength among the goyim. Now we learned a few days ago that Mordechai was actually, we said one opinion, we said that his father was from Binyamin and his mother, we said, was from Shevet Yehuda. So that means he had a double dose of these powers of the shvatim. So they're advising Haman that you're not going to be able to overpower him. That if he's from these shvatim, as in fact he was, then you're not going to be able to overpower him. And they continue, they tell him, Kinafal tipal lefanav, falling you will fall before him. So Darash Yehuda bar Eloi, Shtei Nefilas Halalu Lama. Why are they using a double expression of falling? It means, Amr Eloi, Umazu Meshulu La'ofer, Meshulu La'kechavim. This nation, the Jewish people, are compared to the dust and they're compared to the stars. Kshein Yodin, Yodin Ad'ofer. So when they go down, all the way to the dust. Ukshein Oilin, Oilin Ad La'kechavim. When they go all the way up to the stars. So in other words, don't think, now that you're in the, that if you end up falling before Mordechai, it's going to be only a partial fall. No, Mordechai is going to be like the stars, and you're going to be really low. You're going to be really low down. So the pasuk continues with Sarisi Amelchigu. The servants of the king, the attendants of the king came by Avhilu, and they hurried up Haman. So that means Malamad Shevi Uba Bahola. That means they brought Haman in very quickly and in a panic. He didn't even have the time to wash off the filth from what his daughter had thrown down on him. In other words, because if it just meant that he brought him quickly, then the word would be vayimahru. Vayavhilu suggests a bahola, like a certain panic. So like he's in a panic, I'm not even ready to see the king yet, and already you're schlepping me to come see him. So by the second party, Esther tells Ahasuerus, kinim kanu aniva ami v'gomer. She says, my people and I have been sold. And she says, "Ki einat sar shoyva b'nezik hamelach." The enemy is not even worthwhile. To the damage of the king. Meaning, Omrolai. I mean, she's telling Achashverosh, "Sar ze einat shoyva b'nezik shomelach." This enemy doesn't even care. It's not even worth for him. He doesn't even consider it important to worry about the damage to the king. Ikni baba Vashti. Previously, he was jealous of Vashti, the kapla, and he caused her to be killed. Hashta. Now he's jealous of me, and he wants to kill me. So in that way, she aroused Achashverosh's anger. That look at this, Haman is actually trying to get as close as possible to the king himself. So already he got one wife of yours killed. Now he's about to get a second one killed, and that really kindled Achashverosh's anger against against Haman. So the pasuk continues by Yomer la Amelach Achashverosh, by Yomer la Esther Amalka. King Achashverosh spoke. And he said to Esther Amalka, "My vayomer vayomer lomali." Why the double vayomer in the pasuk? Amar Rabbo, b'tchilai de turgamon, because it means up until that point, Achashverosh used to speak to Esther using an intermediary. He never knew, remember, what nation she's from. Now that he discovered, a kiven de omrele midveis shol kasina. Now, when she's telling him that I'm Jewish and I'm actually descended from the family of Shaul, miyad by Yermila Esther Amalka, then right away he gets rid of the interpreter and speaks to her directly. Because, like, up until now, he felt it's beneath his dignity. She's a commoner who's been raised to be queen, but therefore it's beneath his dignity to speak to her directly. Now that he knows that she herself is descended from royalty, then he could speak to her directly. Therefore, the double Vayerma. So the pasuk continues, Vatoma Esther ish tzar ba'oyev homon ha'ra'azeh. Esther said, so the king asked, Miru Zeva Ezahu, and she answers, Ish Sarva Oyev, a troublesome person who's an enemy, Haman Harazeh, this evil Haman. So why such a long phrase? Why don't you just straight out say Haman Harazeh? Omar Abalaza, Malama Choice Machava Klap Achashverish. We learn from this that she was actually starting to point to Achashverish by saying Ish Sarva Oyev. Because after all, as we learned before, Achashverish himself was a big anti-Semite as well. But a malach came and pushed her hand to point to Haman because, of course, I mean, if she had actually said to Achashverosh, you're the Ish Tzava Oyev, then that would have been the end of her and she wouldn't have accomplished anything. So therefore, the malach pushed her hand in the right direction. Now, why was she even thinking to say that in the first place? The Vilna Gaon explains she was actually the whole time when she's talking to Achashverosh, she's really talking to Hashem. She's really talking and pleading with Hashem. So she's telling Hashem that we have this Ish Tzava Oyev in front of us. So like she was so wrapped up in her tefillah that she didn't even realize that she's pointing at Achashverosh. So the Malach came and pushed her hand to point to Haman so that she can actually get accomplished what she needs to. So the pasuk continues, V'amelach kam b'chamasev egomer. The king got up in his fury, and then a couple of psukim later, Amalach Shav Meginas Abisan, the king returned from the royal garden. So Makish Shiva Lakima, by mentioning it in the same way, Amalach Kamen, Amalach Shav, it makes a hekesh, it makes a comparison between the returning and the getting up. Makima Bachema Af Shiva Bachema. Not only when Achashverosh got up was he angry, but when he came back in from the garden, he was also angry. So what happened? What provoked his anger in the garden? The Azov Ashkach, the Malach Asharis, the Idmulek of Gabri, he saw a bunch of Malachim who were in the form of people, the Ka'akli Lilani de Bustini, and they're chopping down the trees in the garden. He says, what are you doing over here? Omrulay de Bakdin and Haman. So they tell him, Haman told us to do this. So also the Baisei, so now he comes back in, and now he's even angrier. So he left very angry about that Haman is threatening Esther, and now he comes back in. That Haman is even taking it on himself to decide to have the trees in the garden chopped down. So the pasuk says, "V'Haman noifel al hamita." Haman is falling on the bed. So what do you mean noifel? Noifel mi boyle? It should say Haman fell on the bed where Esther was sitting. We learn from this that a malach came and knocked down Haman onto Esther. In other words, the malach knocked him down onto Esther so that Achashverosh should think that he's trying to attack Esther, as in fact Achashverosh did think that. So then he's trying to get up and the malach is pushing him back down. So therefore, noifel, continuously is falling. Omar, so Achashverosh says, look at this, vaimi besa, vaimi bara. Woe inside the house and woe outside. Wherever I go, the Haman is against me, inside the house and outside of it. We doubtion it from the fact that it says Vayomer in the pasuk over there. Vayomer suggests Vayomer. He said woe. So he said woe. There's woe to me. There's troubles inside and outside the house. Vayomer Amalach. So the king says, Hagam lichbush amalka imi baboyis. Is he trying to violate the queen right here when I'm right here inside the room? And the pasuk continues by Yomer Chavoyna v'Gomer. So Chavoyna speaks up and tells Achashverosh about the gallows. So Amar Abalaza, Af Chavoyna, Rosha Ba'is Eitzahoya. In fact, Chavoyna, the Rosha, was also involved in Haman's plot. He was also one of the ones that was involved in the idea to make gallows and hang Mordechai in it. Kivin Shirosh, Leniskaima Atzosoy, but when he saw that his plot is failing, Miyad Barach, then right away he ran away and went over to the other side and spoke up against Haman. Behind the chiv, thus the pasuk says, "The yashlech olav." He throws on him. He throws the Hashem. So Rashi explains it means Hashem. Hashem throws the poronus, the punishment onto the rasha. The lo yachmel, and he has no mercy. Miyode baroyach yibrach. The members of his party all run away from him. Rashi on the pasuk and Maram Shif over here say that actually even the first part of the pasuk, the yashlech olav, can also refer to chavona. Like he's taking all the responsibility and throwing it off himself and putting it on Haman and claiming Haman is the one who came up with this idea and he's the one who should be punished. There is, by the way, a different source, a medrash, that says that actually it wasn't Charvona himself, but rather the Yohan Navi in the guise of Charvona. When we say at the end of Shoshanas Yaakov, when we say Gam Charvona Zochor Latov, that's one reason why we say that, is because of the Yohan Navi is often said on him Zochor Latov. But the other explanation is that it means it was the actual chamberlain Chavona that we're talking about in the Pesukim of Yehu, who was already mentioned in Perek Aleph. What we're saying, he's Zochor Latov. Yes, he may have been a Rosha until this point, but the fact is now he came through and did the right thing, and therefore we say on him Zochor Latov. Okay, so the Pesuk says, after Haman was hanged, V'chamas HaMelech Shochocha, so why Shochocha with two Chofs, Shtei Shchichas Alolu Lama, why is there a double expression of calming down? It means Achas Shal Malkus Shal Olam V'Achas Shal Achashverosh. One of the king of the world, Hashem, had been angry at the Yidden all those years before bowing down to Nebuchadnezzar's statue. Now Hashem's anger was appeased, and Achash shel Achashverosh, and one that Achashverosh was angry at that Achashverosh was angry at Haman. But Amrila Achash shel Esther, Achash shel Vashti. Another explanation is that it means that Achashverosh himself was doubly angry. One, for the fact that Haman had caused Vashti's execution all those years earlier, as we learned the other day, Memuchan Zahaman. And now also that he had tried to kill Vashti. So therefore, Achashverosh was doubly angry. And Haman, now that Haman was hanged, then both those angers of him calmed down. Okay. So now the Gemara is going to digress a little bit to something talking about Yosef and his brothers, which is going to lead us back to something in the Megillah. The Pasuk says, after Yosef revealed his identity to his brothers, so he's sending them back to Eretz Canaan to pick up Yaakov and the rest of the family. The Pasuk says, "L'chulam nosam la'ish chalifos smolos." To each of the brothers, he gave a change of clothing. Ul Binyamin nosam chomish chalifos. To Binyamin, he gave five suits of clothes. So the question is, why did he do that? Efshe davash and starba is it tzaddik? Is it possible that the very same kind of course of action that caused that tzaddik, Yosef himself, to suffer from it, that his father gave him a ksonis pasim, yukosho boy, now he himself is going to stumble in it? And he's going to make the same mistake again and give Binyamin preferential treatment over his brothers? Because of the two sloyim's weight of milas, of fine wool, that Yaakov gave Yosef over his other brothers. Now, two sloyim doesn't weigh very much. It's only a couple of ounces. So Rashi in Shabbos explains that it means that there was only milas around the sleeves of the garment. But whatever the case, it was a very distinguished garment. And because of that little thing that Yaakov added Yosef, that's what got the brothers jealous. Nisgalgal adover. So one thing led to another. The Yodor of Asenel Mitzrayim. And our ancestors went down to Mitzrayim. So how is Yosef making the same mistake by giving more suits of clothes to Binyamin? So the answer is Omer Binyamin by Yefes, Remez Ramazloi. With doing that, with giving Binyamin five changes of clothes, Yosef was giving him a remez, she'osid ben lotzis menu, that a son is going to eventually descend from Shevet Binyamin, she'yetziv milik na'amelach b'chamisha levushei malchus, who's going to leave the king's presence wearing five royal clothing, which is Mordechai, she'nemo, Mordechai yotzib, levush malchus t'cheles for them. Now, that still doesn't completely answer the question. Okay, so there was a remez, very nice, still isn't going to make the brothers jealous. So a number of achronim give an answer that what Yosef did is the five suits that he gave Binyamin were less valuable than the one suit that he gave each of the other shvatim. So therefore, the five suits that he gave Binyamin equaled in value the one suit. So everybody realized that he's not doing that because he wants to give Binyamin sheep clothes. He's obviously doing it as some kind of remez. So maybe they didn't know what the remez meant at the time, but at any rate, they realized he's not just doing it out of favoritism. Okay. Now, in connection with that, when Yosef and Binyamin had the reunion, the pasuk is by Yitbalat Sabri Binyamin Achiv. It says he fell on the necks of Binyamin, his brother. So the question is, what do you mean necks in the plural? Kamat Saborin, have a load of Binyamin. How many necks did Binyamin have? Now Rashi says maybe we're not good at that because the word sabre is very often found in the pasuk in plural. Maharsha says we can still keep it because after all, fine, it says the word savar rav many times in Pesukim. It doesn't say tsavare usually to mean one neck. It doesn't do that. It would say tsavar. So when it says tsavare, so how many necks are we talking about? Amar Rav Elazar bochal shnei mekdoshin sha'asid nlias b'chelkesh b'Binyamin. It means that Yosef was crying because he had Ruach HaKodesh, that there are two bote mikdash that in the future are going to be in the territory of Binyamin, the first and second bote mikdash, ba'asid in lechorev, and they're going to be destroyed. So he was crying over that. And when the pasuk continues, Binyamin bochal tzavar rav, Binyamin cried on Yosef's neck. That means also Bochal Mishkan Shiloh Shaosad Bias Bechelko Shah Yosef, who's crying about Mishkan Shiloh, which in the future is going to be in Yosef's territory, but also the Chorib is going to be destroyed. So in other words, the point is that we're using the neck as a metaphor for the Mishkan or the Bais Mikdash, because for one thing, the idea is chayus of a person goes through their neck from the brain to the rest of their body, in the same way the Bais Mikdash is the conduit through which Alakus comes to us Jewish people and to the rest of the world. There's a sicha where the Rebbe points out, by the way, so why is Yosef crying over Binyamin's Bate Mikdash and Binyamin over Yosef? The reason is because when it comes to your own thing, you're not supposed to cry. Crying is when you can't do anything about it. Then you cry. So Yosef has no business crying over Mishkan Shiloh in his territory. Instead of crying, he should act to prevent that Mishkan should ever be destroyed. The same with Binyamin with his two Bate Mikdash. But when we're talking about each other's, there's a limit to what I can do to help you. Ultimately, it depends on you. Then therefore, each of them is crying, saying, in other words, there's a limit what I can do. But when it comes to your own thing, there's no limit. You keep on doing. You don't just sit there and indulge in a cry. The pasuk continues, "Vehine aneichem royes," that Yosef says to the brothers, "Behold, your eyes see the ene ochi Binyamin, and the eyes of my brother Binyamin." So, what does that mean? Amar Abelazer, Amar Lahem. It means Yosef is telling them, "Kashem she'ein b'libi Binyamin ochi." Just like I don't hold anything against my brother Binyamin, shalai hayu b'mchirasi. He wasn't there when I was sold, so I have nothing against him. Kach ein b'libi aleichem. The same way, I don't have anything in my heart against any of you. And when he continues, kifi amadaber aleichem, my mouth is what's speaking to you, means kifi kein libi, you should know what I'm saying with my mouth is exactly what I'm feeling in my heart. I don't hold anything against you. Another thing in connection with Yosef and his brothers, the pasuk says that he sent, together with the brothers, he sent for his father like this, 10 donkeys that are carrying the best of Mitzrayim. So my mituv Mitzrayim, what do we mean the best of Mitzrayim? Amar Rabbi Yamin by Yefes, Amar Rabbi Lazar. These are all drushes that Rabbi Yamin by Yefes is saying, which is why we bring them one after the other. Sholach Yayin Yoshen Shadas Skenim Noicha Himenu. He sent to Yaakov old wine, which calms down the spirits of old people. So in other words, this was for Yaakov, this would be the best thing that he could send him from Mitzrayim, something that would have the best effect on him, which is old wine. At the end of Parshas Vayechi, it says, Vayechu gam echo vayiplu lefanav, that all the brothers went and bowed down to Yosef. Amar Binyamin by Yefes, Amar Abelazar, Hainu de Amri Inchi. This is like what the expression people say, Tala Beidna Sogid Le. When the fox has his time, and the fox is a very lowly creature, then you have to bow to him. So, in other words, right now, Yosef is in power, so therefore the other brothers bowed to him. What says Tala, my Bitsurusi Machrua? What do you mean? Why are we calling him a fox compared to his brothers? He's not any lower than them. Why are they any great? In what way is he any lesser than them? Eli Itma, Hochi Itma. Rather, this statement of Rabbi Yamin by Yefes was said, it was said as follows. When the pasuk says at the beginning of Vayichi, Vayishtachu Yisrael al Rosh HaMita, that Yaakov bowed on the head of the bed in front of Yosef, that's Amar Rabbi Yamin by Yefes. Amar Rabbi Lazar, Tala B'idna Sogidlai. Bow to even to the fox when it's his time. In other words, even though Yaakov is Yosef's father, and what is he doing? Bowing to his own son. But right now, Yosef is in power, and therefore Yaakov showed him respect by bowing down to him. One more drasha about Yosef and his brothers, and then the Gemara continues with things involving the Megillah. The pasuk is by Inachem Oisim by Dabra Alivam, that Yosef comforted them and he spoke to their hearts. So what does that mean to their hearts? Amr Binyamin by Yefes, Amr Abelazar, Malamach Amalam Dvaram Amiskablan Alalev. He told them things that are reasonable and can be accepted by the heart. In other words, he wasn't just telling them, don't worry. He's actually giving them a logical argument. He's telling them, Ma'asora Neris Lo Yochlo Lachabis Nerechod, Madach 10 candles could not put out one candle. You 10 tried to put me out and you couldn't. How could one candle put up 10? So in other words, you have nothing to be afraid of from me, because even if I wanted to try to harm you, I wouldn't be able to. Hashem would never allow me to make that happen. Okay. So we'll continue tomorrow, best Hashem, with the drashas on the Megillah and other related topics.